And welcome back. If I had another 8 hours in the day, I might be able to fit everything in. Maybe. It's quite the juggling act, because the pace at which this material rolls in is remarkable. And then you have to wade through it, as all of you would do, and figure out which ones are worthy of submitting on the site, so you can all take a look at it. There's a lot of junk out there. A lot of very cobbled together, created disinformation. It's difficult. Never been more difficult. So we have a lot of information this hour, and let's see if my other half is there. Are you there, partner?
I am.
Yes.
Happy Wednesday.
Well, thank you. You sound so delightful and cheerful and gosh. Somebody was ranting today, saying that you are the best on radio in terms of this whole field of endeavor that we're involved in. And I said, well, what about me? Well, no, I didn't say that. But somebody was saying some very nice things about you today. So you are well respected.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Try. I, you know, don't claim to know it all, that's for sure.
No, and the more we seem to find out, the worse the whole damn thing gets. That prion conversation we had the other day, for example, that's just not good.
That's very worrisome. You know, it's you don't hear a lot of talk about that, and but if that's, you know, baked into the cake, so to speak, well, we're pretty much all doomed.
The cake is full of so many fruits and nuts and surprises and bombs. It's quite a cake. And, you know, the bombs are anything with all the trick buzzwords, self-assembling, quantum dot, hydrogels, and it's crazy. There's so much garbage in the field, in this field.
Yeah,
in terms
well, those,
of news
those
and
are the people. They're promoted because they're good distractions from the real issues that people are suffering from.
Exactly.
You know, the immune dysregulation, and then with the turbo cancers now, the neurological damage that's occurring, cardiovascular damage.
Oh, we've been at this for quite a while, and I will say that my original sense of it all was that this was a multi-tentacled monster. And over time, all I've seen are more and more tentacles. I mean, things that Erica finds and I notice occasionally, there must be several dozen primary or semi-primary means of killing that we've found with this weapon. It's not a joke.
Well, this protein and or its fragments is a metabolic poison in multiple ways. It can affect different body systems depending on where it is and what it's interacting with. You know, right down to the nucleus. This thing can make its way into the nucleus and cause problems. Wherever it goes, is
yeah,
it's going to do damage.
Whatever you think about the spike protein, just remember, you don't want anything to do with it. Believe me, nothing. And I go back again, wear a mask. We've always said that, wear a mask. There was an article we ran the other day, I think it's might be up on the right-hand side of the page, Newsweek magazine had a very well done article about the viability and worthiness of masks, and it's true. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah.
But you know, you got a 10 or 20% advantage with one. Take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were talking about something else the other day that was very concerning, and it had to do with natto, and was it bromelain?
Yeah, you know, hypothetically speaking, these are enzymes that people are taking to break down the spike protein with the presumption that if you can break it down, it will be less biologically active. That may be true. People do seem to get relief, particularly with the natto, especially when it comes to clots, because this thing is an anti-fibrinolytic, breaks down fibrin. But that may not be true. I don't know if it's been tested. I should probably go back and read those papers, but I don't believe they looked at whether or not the fragments that result from this enzymatic breakdown of the spike are biologically active or not.
If they're not deactivated, go ahead.
Well, if you're breaking them into these amyloidogenic peptides, which are sequences of amino acids that have the ability to cause proteins to misfold, well, that isn't something we would want.
No. In other words,
now,
it's the old story. You break something, you're going to destroy it. You break it into 10 pieces. But unfortunately, many or most of those 10 pieces are still active. So what have you done?
Right. So we don't know. We're at the mercy of time at this point to bear this out because, I, to my knowledge, nobody's looking at it. Nobody has funding to look at it.
No. No, I don't. I haven't seen nothing about it. So, and I take bromelain and natto every day, and most people do who are on top of this. And that also goes back, we could take the same mental imagery and go look at the DNA plasmid contamination. And if you're to break those DNA strands up, there is reason to believe that they may still be active as well in their own evil way when they're treated like that, causing trouble.
DNA introduced into a nucleus, particularly when the cell is dividing, is ripe for integration.
Yep. So you're going to break up the DNA, so-called contamination, which I'm not speaking for Erica. I don't believe it's a contaminant at all. I think it was put in there. It's too much of it. 100 billion to 400 billion pieces of it in each injection. And if you think you're going to get some kind of clean new shot by getting the new vaccine, guess again.
Yeah, they've already said or denied that it's a problem. They're not going to do anything about it. So
no.
you can bet that it's in this latest one as much as it was in the previous ones. But the contention right now is that because it is in little fragments, that is evidence that they tried to break it up.
Uh-huh. Now, no takers here, not on my side of the table.
Mm.
Here's another one. Now, The happy-go-lucky venom king, the carny chiropractor, is running around exciting everyone who doesn't know better about nicotine. Nicotine is the answer. Don't worry, be happy. Just slap that patch on. We'll cut it into smaller pieces is a recommendation. But this guy is leading. Remember the Pied Piper? This guy is leading people this way and that way. It's all venom. It's all this. I've never seen anything like it. I haven't. But using the mainstream media to influence the masses is a growing art all the time. Nicotine is being pushed by that individual and others as being the be-all and end-all of finding and searching for some kind of a compound that's going to resolve all the damage and all the danger. And it's just not that way. We've got a lot of stories.
No.
Look under our names, all right? And there's two links there. The second one, for those who believe the carny chiropractor's nicotine BS, read carefully. And Erica has assembled a lot of very important hard science, all right? Hard science. You want to read those if you've got them pulled up, those first two quotes, then we'll read the names of the PDFs. These are hard peer-reviewed science papers that are assembled for your edification.
Well, I should probably start off by explaining what he is saying that nicotine does.
Right.
He's pushing around this idea that what's in the vax is snake venom. And now, to be clear, there are a couple of peptide sequences that are a match for a couple of snake venoms. That is true. He is saying that the receptor that it's looking for is the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, which is prevalent on neurons. And that may be true. That was looked at early on in the pandemic, and it's been looked at several times since, and most recently has been more or less discounted. There are two papers we have. I'm not seeing them here right now. That show that this was looked at fairly closely and discounted. The main receptor is ACE2, and the spike binds very tightly to that, and that's how it enters a cell. And you have ACE2 receptors in your lungs, despite what this person is saying. He actually claims there's no ACE2 receptors in the lungs.
Hold that thought. He actually said there are no ACE2 receptors in the lungs.
Yeah.
I hope that got a lot of your attention if you're not paying attention. That's what we call a whopper. It's just not true.
We've had three years of very experienced researchers around the globe publishing on this. And we are gaining an understanding of the mechanisms of how it's doing its damage, and it really is mind-blowing when you consider all the possibilities, the mechanisms of action. But so his contention is that if you take nicotine, which competes for binding to that receptor, then you are protecting yourself against the venom attaching to it, or if the venom is already there, then it can displace it. Well, we don't have any evidence of that. But people do get, in some cases, some relief from nicotine, and the mechanism of action of that is most likely because it changes the flow of calcium in neurons. You get a big release of glutamate when you have a hit of nicotine, and that will change the flow of calcium through ion channels. And if it's a nerve, that results in an action potential or propagation. In this case, it's being used as a drug, which is fine. I mean, people are entitled to use drugs to ameliorate some of the side effects of this weapon. There's nothing wrong with that, but I think it has to be considered carefully with any risk that might go with it. And in the case of nicotine, because of the pathology that's already happening with the coagulation of the blood and the endothelial dysfunction, the way
damage.
The endothelium is being damaged, I would really think twice before using nicotine. The other thing is that because of the vasoconstriction, you're causing your arteries or your blood vessels to contract. You're depriving tissues of oxygen. And, we have evidence of that from smokers over the years that have periodontal disease because they're not getting adequate blood flow to the gums.
Right.
So that is a concern. And in addition to that, there's a risk of cancer when you have this chronic deprivation of oxygen at the level of the capillary. You have an increase in something called vascular endothelial growth factor, which is exactly what tumors need to be able to grow and metastasize. So there's quite a bit of literature published on nicotine, and this is nicotine separate and apart from tobacco. This is nicotine being used as a drug.
Straight on a patch.
Yeah. Straight, well, and then there's gums and
oral
patches, and then vaping. But vaping I would consider kind of a form of smoking. It's not not tobacco, but it's still
right
coming in through the lungs. But I would weigh though these, you know, very serious side effects against whatever benefits you think you're getting.
But what are you seeing out there? People are rushing to embrace this and are yelling from the rooftops, nicotine, nicotine patch, and we'll all be well.
The danger here in embracing this idea, people are being told that it's some kind of an antidote, that if you do this, you will be protected. And I want to say that we've had many smokers who, obviously, because of this habit, are getting a good dose of nicotine, perhaps daily, many times a day, and it has not protected them from any of this, any of the clotting that's going on, the heart issues, the POTS, the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, dizziness. You know, they're every bit as affected as somebody who doesn't smoke. So,
here's the point. We would have seen a couple of years ago people beginning to talk about, well, people who smoke don't seem to be getting very sick. They're not dying suddenly, et cetera, et cetera. We never see anything like that because nicotine is not an antidote.
No, it's not. It's a drug. It has been used as an analgesic, you know, for pain relief because you get a big hit of dopamine too, and that is really what's at the crux of the addiction part of it is
sure.
It's really the dopamine that's driving that. So you know, there's many, many studies that we have here. I wouldn't say they're all here, but here's a list of maybe 10 of them. Nicotine promotes
11.
Breast cancer metastasis.
Correct. Yeah, let's do this. Read the first two little screen snaps of text,
okay,
and then we'll go through each story here. That's the way I think we'd be best off
all
doing
right
it. Go ahead.
Exogenous nicotine stimulates the endothelial nicotinic acetylcholine receptor to induce angiogenic processes, which may contribute to tumor angiogenesis. That means that it's giving the tumor a blood supply. Tumor growth, atherosclerotic plaque, neovascularization, and other tobacco-related diseases. Nicotine induces pathological angiogenesis at clinically relevant concentrations and promotes endothelial cell migration, proliferation, survival, tube formation, and nitric oxide production in vitro, mimicking the effect of other angiogenic growth factors. Nicotine stimulates nicotinic acetylcholine receptors on the endothelium to induce angiogenic processes, and there are synergistic interactions between nicotinic acetylcholine receptors and then it gets cut off.
If you're new to this, understand endothelium means the cell lining on the inside of your blood vessels, are all the circulatory vessels. All right, they have endothelial cells on the inside, and angiogenic means, in simple terms, go ahead and give us that again, just so they know.
It means it's going to create new blood vessels.
Blood flow, blood supply.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead
so
with
another
the second one.
Yeah. This is from another article. Several lines of evidence indicate that nicotine may contribute to the development of cancer. Evidence from experimental in vitro studies on cell cultures, in vivo studies on rodents, as well as studies on humans, inclusive of epidemiological studies, indicate that nicotine itself, independent of other tobacco constituents, may stimulate a number of effects of importance in cancer development.
Okay. So maybe you who believe in nicotine won't scream quite so loud about it because it's clearly involved with cancer, malignancy, metastasis, and things you don't want anything to do with. Now, Eric has found a number of peer-reviewed medical papers, 11 of them here, and we've got them on this page. Find it underneath our names and guests. And the first one, and I'll just read the titles here, and she can comment on it, because these are all first-class papers. Nicotine promotes breast cancer metastasis. Not good.
No, and especially in light of, you know, what's already going on with the bioweapon. There's already an increased risk of cancer from being exposed to this, I'm going to call it an oncogenic protein, a cancer-promoting protein.
Second
that
one.
Interacts with the BRCA1 gene, the gene that's responsible for DNA repair when it comes to breast cancer.
And that's not even mentioning the P53.
Right.
The BRCA1 is key in preventing breast cancer. And we're seeing...
Breast, ovarian, and prostate, actually.
Reproductive cancers, basically, yeah. We're seeing this now in turbo format, which is absolutely horrible. So again, the first paper up there, you'll see it, is nicotine promotes breast cancer metastasis. Second one. Nicotine stimulates angiogenesis and promotes tumor growth and atherosclerosis. How lucky do you feel? Is that nicotine patch really what you want? Third one, nicotine promotes tumor growth and metastasis in mouse models of lung cancer. Is that what you want? So put that patch on. Fourth one, nicotine promotes tumor growth and enhances neovascularization. These are medical papers. Go look at them. Pass them around. The fifth one, an experimental test of the nicotinic hypothesis of COVID-19. Sixth one, nicotine upregulates, meaning it increases, ACE2 expression and increases competence for SARS-CoV-2 in human pneumocytes. Translate that one for us real quick.
This means that nicotine will cause more ACE2 receptors so that the virus, if you are exposed to the virus, will have more opportunities to get into the body. Human pneumocytes, that's another name for lung cells in the lungs. And there you have it, ACE2 expression in lung cells, even though Brian Artis says they're not there.
Okay. It's like saying there are no such things as viruses. It's just kind of wacky. The effect of transdermal nicotine patches on fracture healing in a rabbit model. All right, so there's a negative indication there in terms of bone growth and regrowth.
And the reason being is that microcirculation is critical in
right.
having a bone heal. And the other issue is the changes in calcium metabolism. You know, smokers are known to have a much greater risk of osteoporosis. And for women, it also lowers estrogen levels in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next paper, impact of nicotine on bone healing. Next paper, nicotine modulates human brain plasticity via calcium-dependent mechanisms. All right. And then we got a couple more. Oral nicotine aggravates endothelial dysfunction and vascular inflammation. You up for that? You want to really aggravate your endothelial cell dysfunction and vascular inflammation. You want to increase your body's inflammation. The last one, and there are others, transdermal nicotine mimics, transdermal nicotine being patches, mimics smoking-induced endothelial dysfunction. That means the inside of your veins and arteries are, the endothelial cells are going to start failing to perform their normal configuration. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, it's inflammatory.
Right.
And now, conversely, you know, this gets compared to niacin, nicotinic acid, like as if they're one and the same. And actually, they have almost opposite effects. Niacin will lower inflammation.
Right.
So anyone that's trying to tell you that these things are interchangeable, they are not. They're not. Niacin, nicotinic acid, that's flush niacin, has a long list of beneficial effects in the body and is actually needed for DNA repair, proper blood coagulation. A dose of niacin, 1 to 3 grams per day, will actually lower fibrinogen, which is the starting material for clots. You need it to make ATP. You need it to, as I said, repair DNA. So that's really the, in terms of I don't want to call it a therapeutic. It's actually an essential nutrient that is depleted in this bioweapon illness. There is something called a niacin sink, which means a drain, that occurs with this pathology, and you're losing niacin through multiple mechanisms. And nicotine does not put it back. You need nicotinic acid or flush niacin.
You're not going to get it in any other way. You can't take it just a supplement by itself.
No, the body does not convert nicotine into nicotinic acid. That's through combustion. The combustion of the tobacco will turn nicotine into nicotinic acid, but the human body has no mechanism for doing that.
All right. Okay, we're going to put that on the shelf for all of you to look at, to read and consider while you're thinking about, or even if you've already started using, nicotine. Okay? So this will be posted in the archive on the homepage. It's under guests right now. Okay, next up we're going to go talk to...
I just want to add one other thing that really disturbed me that I heard him say. Mm-hmm. There was some recommendation to avoid magnesium for a period of 3 months.
Oh, that's right.
Because the snake venom needs magnesium to work. The absurdity of some of his statements are, I don't know, unsurpassed. I've never really heard of such... I don't even know what to call it.
Well, he's basically, as are many... when they speak, people listen. They think that these people are scientists. He's a retired chiropractor. He's not a trained scientist in this field. He's picked up a lot, but you know, learning on the job
is
not necessarily.
Well, he's spun up a story.
Yeah, you know, he's spinning up a lot of stories. We can go way back.
Do not avoid magnesium under any circumstances. Most people are woefully deficient in magnesium.
Terribly. Maybe the biggest single magnesium supplement deficiency in America. Maybe.
Yeah. It's easily depleted. It's not easy to get. You know, the biggest sources would be leafy green vegetables, and how many people make a habit of eating that every day? And even if you do, as I said, it's rapidly depleted. But with no magnesium, you can't regulate your heartbeat. You can't process your neurotransmitters. You're going to have sky-high catecholamine levels. That's stress hormones. The list goes on and on. You need magnesium as a natural calcium channel blocker so that you don't get excitotoxicity, like from too much glutamate.
That's MSG, basically. That's the net result, anyway.
Well, the body actually creates glutamate. It's an excitatory neurotransmitter from glutamine, and you need it actually to think, for learning, memory, cognition, and for nerve impulses.
As in autonomic nerve impulses.
Yeah, it's critical to normal functioning nervely, but it has to be balanced with GABA. That's the opposing calming neurotransmitter. But without magnesium, you can't go between these different neuropeptides. Without magnesium, you're not going to you'll have disrupted sleep. The list is long. There's over 300 enzymes that depend on magnesium, and as I said, probably the most critical in this disease is heart rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't even imagine somebody deliberately avoiding magnesium for 3 months.
That's crazy. Honest to God, I've been aware of magnesium since I was in college and how important it is. It is essential, and as I said, it may be the biggest single supplement that Americans are suffering from deficiencies thereof. It's awful. And I remember as a kid, there was a product, and it may have been the first magnesium supplement. It was called Milk of Magnesia. And people used to take that seriously. And I don't remember much more than that. The bottle was blue, I think. Anyway.
There are different forms, and some are more easily absorbed than others. Probably the best one is that Carolyn Dean's product, that Remag.
I used to have Carolyn on the program a long time ago.
You just need a little bit diluted in water, and that's probably the easiest one to absorb, get your levels up, and then in any sort of transdermal
I take Remag every day. I do.
Me too.
There's
me
an
too.
Add up on, yeah. That's why you're 6 foot two. There's an ad on the homepage for it. REMAG, Remag. You'll see it.
And the other thing too is for those taking vitamin D or with a vitamin D deficiency, very often that's a magnesium deficiency. You won't be able to use your vitamin D unless you've got magnesium.
Got it. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, I hope that I spelled it out clearly. We've worked very diligently on this. Eric is brilliant, and putting forth this truth about nicotine hopefully will slow some people down. We don't want people getting hurt. We don't have all the answers, but we certainly do have the science when it comes to things that you shouldn't be messing with. And the papers are there. We just put up 11. There are many more. And they're involved with tumor growth, metastasis. It's not something you want to play with, especially in this age of turbo cancer, for God's sakes. Come on. Think about it. All right. There are a lot of Pied Pipers out there making lots of money on a desperate, fear-driven, fear-based society. It's all about fear. And, boy, people will put that money in the collection plate real quick when they get to be afraid. Okay, John Campbell had a conversation with Dr. Agnes Dalgleish on cancer, and we've got a couple of clips from that. We're able to bring you all these really exceptionally gifted and talented people through video, and we, rather than try and chase them all down and set up an interview, and we can go and pick the parts that we think are the most relevant for you and present them to you. So we have kind of the best of both worlds here. All right. You want to set this up in any way? I'm ready to go with the first clip.
Okay. So, more doctors are coming out and speaking on the turbo cancers that they're observing. And this Professor Angus Dalgleish is from St. George's University in London. He's a professor of oncology. And he was very involved years ago in the HIV research.
I remember that. I hadn't thought of that.
He's brilliant. He's utterly brilliant.
Yeah, I was very deep into that whole thing, as you know, and now I remember.
Dalgleish. Did you know he figured out why some people, when they acquire the HIV infection, don't progress. Some people progress very quickly into AIDS, and mm-hmm. others that they term non-progressors. He figured out why.
I have vague recollection of this, but I couldn't tell you why. In short, what did he come up with? Why do some people stop? They stall out.
It depends. It depends on their immune system, their HLA type, HLA, human leukocyte antigen. That mm-hmm. is how your immune system recognizes and processes foreign proteins, distinguishes between self and non-self. So everybody's got a slightly different HLA. There's many different types, and he figured out that... what was it? The HLA-B8, which is probably, 20% of the Caucasian population would progress very quickly to AIDS if they got this virus, whereas people with an HLA-B27 almost never progress to full-blown AIDS. So it is how the immune system sees that virus and how it reacts to it. And he said, and I agree with this, I mentioned this some time ago when we got in the mold topic, because people reacting to mold toxins can be differentiated by their HLA types. The HLA-DR is very sensitive to mold toxins. They don't process them the same way as others, and they get very sick from them. The same seems to apply to this spike protein or the coronavirus. How it interacts with people's immune systems determines whether or not they're going to progress to severe disease.
All right, very good. All right, here's Professor Dalgleish, D-A-L-G-L-E-I-S-H, Professor Dalgleish, with John Campbell.
It got it in one, so that was the environment I was in. Yeah. And then we come up with the vaccine comes in. And as I said, I had a lot of experience in this, and I came to the conclusion, if you need to give more than two shots of a vaccine, it doesn't work. That would be one of my general rules of vaccine. And I think that's been proven to be absolutely right. I mean, the boosters are worse than useless. And they should never have been given. If they were going to be considered, they should only have been given to people who you knew their immune status. You should have mentioned it. I went on to a TV live debate with other doctors, and I said, why the hell would you give a booster to a vaccine that people have already had without measuring if the response was satisfactory? Because they might not need it. Because if they do not need it, you'll make things worse. And that was from the BCG example, to name but one. So people just dismiss me. They wouldn't enter into proper debate about this. Said this is an emergency. No, it wasn't an emergency, because the next thing I realised, especially when the people who had the boosters were actually often saying, "Well, I never had the COVID till I had the last booster." There were all sorts of clues like this. But it was in this group who were getting the relapses, they all mentioned they were having the boosters as if they'd done the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly twigged. I thought, it's the booster that's leading to the relapse. And as a scientist, I wanted to know what the reason for that is. Well, I know that you've only got a limited capacity in your immune system. If you boost with another vaccine, to harness half the immune system to make antibodies to a virus that no longer exists on the planet, probably for 1 or even 2 years, you are going to weaken it. You're going to reduce the front line, and then we got the papers coming out that beautifully confirmed it. They showed that the booster, you no longer make IgG 1 and 3 neutralizing antibodies. You get a subtype switch to IgG4, and there's a very detailed, excellent paper showing this. Well, an IgG4 subtype is the last you want, because it's a tolerogenic. It basically says, I've had enough of this abuse, we're switching off this assault on us with these agents.
Remember, we've talked about IgG4 several times, and it literally turns off your symptomology. You no longer are broadcasting to your conscious self that there's something wrong. It causes your entire system basically to go, what, colorblind would be one way, or into a stealth position. You don't have your normal reactions anymore to these terrible pathogens. That's IgG4. All right.
Yep.
But it gets worse because it also suppresses the T cell response. And there were some people did a really nice study. I can't remember it offhand, but I actually presented it in a presentation that I did yesterday. The first group who showed that the T cell response crashes after the booster in cancer patients, whereas it's not perturbed in the first two. But the booster leads to a massive reduction in the T-cell response. Not in all of them, but in many of them. Well, to me, this was enough. Because we know for immunotherapy, I knew from my work of over 20 years before we even started using these checkpoint inhibitors, Ipi and Nivo, etc., that the T-cell controlled this disease. Because I only saw relapses when there was reason for perturbation. Now we had a booster that was clearly causing perturbation, which if it was transient, I wouldn't mind, but it was a lot more than transient, especially when the patient said, well, I've had five vaccines. I mean, I was beginning to scream, what are they doing? What's the
Indeed, what are they doing? That's from a man who knows. And I'm going to jump up to our last clip here real quick. Any comment on that little segment?
Well, he's seeing the same thing there that we're seeing here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you try to call attention to it, and no one's listening.
No. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind is made up. There you go.
Yep.
Here we go.
Your patients, Professor, with the melanoma, there's this perturbation in the immune system. Now, have you seen aggressive? Is the melanoma become more aggressive, more a sort of more virulent melanoma as a result of the perturbations, which may well include the vaccine?
Completely. In fact, it's my colleagues who came up with saying we're seeing this too. It's absolutely explosive. They coined this word explosive, and my colorectal colleagues are seeing this now. They're talking about explosive presentations of colorectal cancer.
He's talking about turbo cancers, and we've talked also on the program about young people, teenagers, are getting colon cancer. This is just shocking. It's unprecedented. All right, here we go.
Young people particularly, like they've never seen before, and it was with one of those that the integration of the spike protein in their tumors.
So it's almost like a new disease, explosive colorectal cancer of the young.
Yeah. That's terrifying. I mean, why is it explosive? So they are presenting, and it's already in the liver and the lymph nodes of the lungs, whereas normally
it's already metastasized.
Yeah, this is a process that when you put them under pressure, it gradually escapes. This is a slow process in most people. Explosive is extremely unusual, and the colorectal surgeons are all reporting this.
Now, have you seen any cases that you probably wouldn't expect of lymphoma, cancer of the lymphatic system?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I don't do lymphomas as in the clinic, so that's the first thing. But I'm hearing people who've, after their booster vaccines, have gone down with lumps in the neck and things like that. And I found a colleague worked somewhere else completely. And I bumped into him and I said, you know, how are you? And I said, oh, I'm okay, but I've developed some lumps in my neck and they've been diagnosed as lymphoma. And I just, trying to be sympathetic, said, God, what earth caused that? And the patient said, oh, apparently it's due to the vaccine. That's what my oncologist said. And I said, but this is the reaction I'm getting everywhere. And yet, when we report it higher up the chain, we're told it's anecdote to shut up and not cause panic amongst the patient. At any rate, that person told me that three of her friends out of a couple of dozen, had all had the same thing. It was quite amazing. Then I found somebody else locally had had a lymphoma diagnosed. Then I found a close member of the family had developed a leukemia, and that was after the booster vaccine. Now here, I want to point out that quite a few people, especially my age and et cetera around, probably have low-grade B-cell disease, lymphomas, leukemias, et cetera.
Myelomas, yeah.
And it's maintained under control because of the good, healthy T-cell surveillance. It keeps it under control. So when you give a booster and you start to find these B-cell leukemias and things coming more common, you don't have to look hard to work out what the pathogenesis is, why they've suddenly appeared. But my other colleagues are pointing out that they're seeing more renal cancer too, a lot more renal cancer. Now, renal cancer and myeloma were always lumped together as being tumours that seem to respond to immune therapy. But, you know, they were both the ones that responded to interferon and interleukin-2 before we had specific therapy. So that again would fit the T-cell perturbation control theory.
Mm-hmm. And are we talking about what sorts of leukemias potentially are we talking about here?
Well, B-cell ones. So, I mean, one of the ones specifically had a sort of rare subtype called mantle cell. Mm-hmm. But that all fits into the more chronic.
Remind me, please, is that the myeloid type?
Yes.
Yeah. Right, thank you, yeah. Now, you mentioned before about the S40. Now, this is the simian virus, I think, isn't it? Simian,
yes.
Virus 40.
Yes.
Now, am I right in thinking that coincidentally infects monkey kidney cells, which are,
yes,
cultured?
Absolutely right, yeah.
And then those cell cultures are used to make the DNA, which is then used to make the RNA, which is in the vaccine. Is that the way it works?
I'm not. In theory, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. We've got a couple more things we want to duck in here before we run out of time. But that's really another superior, stellar doctor. I'll call him a doctor scientist. Professor Angus Dalgleish, just a very bright man. And you heard him. These are exploding, these cancers, all over the place. And when you have colorectal cancer and cancers in teenagers, this is not good. This is not good. All right, we have about 2 minutes left, maybe three if we get lucky. And you had a couple of readers we wanted to do, I think, yes?
Yeah. These are just pertaining. It's an example of a person who was a smoker.
The headaches?
And, oh, no, that's actually a different one. But
vaxxed smoker number one.
No, this was somebody that worked
unvaxxed.
In an office with vaxxed. Yeah, she
unvaxxed.
Was unvaxxed.
This is unvaxxed, all right.
Oh, you better go. I got to find
it. All right. Has anyone who has experienced bad effects from shedding found ivermectin to be helpful? That's a general question. And the response, yes, I now suffer dilated cardiomyopathy due to a heart arrhythmia. My heart's electricity is out and it beats too fast. I'm a 45-year-old female. My best friend suffered blood clots in her uterus, then suffered a huge heart attack 6 weeks ago. Due to a blood clot, has to get a pacemaker in 4 weeks. Where my heart muscle is dilated, hers does not work anymore at all. Her heart function is 35%. I did everything and took everything as I was supposed to, preventative, and still ended up with a busted ticker. Strong's out there, and if anyone has the miracle cure to transmission, shedding, please share it. And the other person said, my best friend is a 39-year-old female. This is again, it's the war on the unvaxxed. which I firmly believe was planned in this entire bioweapons scenario. There you go. There's another one. Go ahead. We got another couple.
Someone says to that, goodness, how much contact did you have with vaccinated people before you became ill? I hope in time you are able to recover.
Go ahead. We got another minute.
I am an estate agent, and we all sit in one office together. 5 out of the 7 are jabbed. In my whole office, 7 out of 11 are jabbed. I started feeling unwell after our doctor jabbed last March, as we had to get antibiotics. Then it went downhill from there, with all the symptoms making you feel terrible every day, until I was diagnosed at the end of September 2021. I must say that my body struggles to chelate iron. I don't know if that may be a reason why some people are affected differently. My friend did not notice anything until it was too late. She has thick blood, higher blood pressure, and lots of iron. The only symptom we had in common was tremendous shoulder and neck pain.
Now, all right, again, we're monitoring the unvaxxed out there. Those who
we're getting to the kicker here, if we can fit it in.
Yeah, go to it.
Someone says that, I'm so sad to read this. What have you tried for your heart, or in general? I have heard that nicotine patches, or even smoking a pipe, LOL, for real, since nicotine blocks ACE2 receptors. No, it doesn't block ACE2 receptors. It might block nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. Those are different. And the answer was, I am a smoker. I wanted to quit. But then the studies in Germany came out about smokers not getting COVID or not getting really sick, as it keeps the spike proteins from binding to the ACE2 receptors, and I decided against it. They even banned tobacco sales in my country, South Africa, for 5 or 6 months in 2020. I also did ivermectin, NAC, zinc, vitamin D3, B vitamins, magnesium, good multivitamins, probiotics, antihistamine, quercetin, black cumin oil, etc., as the info came out. I started using it as preventative. Also did chlorella, zeolite, and now at this moment, activated charcoal detox. I am thinking more like maybe they are transmitting prions, and they are transmitting a signal. I was diagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy. My heart started beating too fast, and a left branch block heart arrhythmia. The cardiologist said that my heart's electricity is out of beat. The jabbed may be transmitting something that buggers up our electrical system.
Mm-hmm.
There were 2 5G towers in my town and surroundings, and they have erected 4 more, 2 of them at schools. I still use everything. Even though I am a smoker, I always exercised and was a very busy person. I was busy exercising with a trainer over Zoom when I started feeling unwell. Maybe we should start protecting ourselves against all these frequencies being emitted.
Yeah. All right. We've got to wrap it up there real quick. We're running way late. But I hope that helps all of you and gives you more to think about and process as you're wading through this sea of misinformation, craziness, disinformation, and downright ruthless fraud that's happening too. Great job. Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right. We'll be right back. Hang on.